I think this is going to be an interesting study. It is January 20th, 2024 of the Common Era. And the time is... I can't see it. Hang on a second here. Time is 1840 hours. It's a good thing I checked. Eastern Standard Time. The floaters only affect my left eye. So if I close my left eye, I don't get the floaters, but my right eye, my prescription's not quite as good for my right eye, or my right eye's not quite as well focused. So, it is going to be interesting, I think, today because, well, I reviewed the videos on the JW site, The Drama, that has a two-part story to it about the brothers in Africa. And that was quite informative, quite nice to see what sort of lives they're living there, and among other things, too, and the direction from the governing body in the case of certain emergencies. But also, Brother Jackson gave a talk, and Brother Flodine did, too, but I thought... I was very interested in the content of Brother Jackson's talk about how the governing body handled the relations with a certain government. In his talk, that was quite interesting. I found that quite interesting. Now, we're going to read Crucible, the C-cubed article, Crucible of Credible Creed, also called the C3 article, and it's chapter 5, paragraph 5 today. Hazor is another city, and this is how we get our dating of the conquest of the promised land by Joshua and the Israelites, of ancient Israel, which may offer us other insight into the time when Joshua and Israel crossed the Jordan River to take the promised land, since a destruction by Israel occurred there as told by the Bible. So we're looking for evidence because the Bible tells us there should be. There are said to have been two destructions at Hazor. The first one was described by the archaeologist who worked at Hazor, Mr. Yadin, as most quote-unquote probably done by Thutmose III. However, we beg to differ. In the crucible of our creed, Joshua was contemporary with Thutmose III, and the evidence of a destruction using fire is present both in the excavation and in the Bible itself. How well does this vindicate the Bible account, appraising the destruction itself as executed by Joshua and his army, with regard to both its date and its details, allowing for evidence of fire and of the utter destruction of temples? Question mark. How well does this vindicate the Bible account? You see, other nations wouldn't destroy the temples because other nations didn't worship gods that were jealous, like Jehovah is jealous with regard to the other gods. He wanted the Israelites to destroy the temples. The second destruction of Hazor, we must keep reading because we have quite a bit to cover today, is reported near 1234 BCE. The Book of Judges, that's the archaeological date. That's not the date of our chronology. The Book of Judges tells of Jabin, the king of Hazor, having been defeated by Barak with the help of Jael, the wife, I just noticed a typo here, of Heber the Kenite in the days of the judge Deborah. So Jabin, the king of Hazor, defeated by Barak with the help of Jael in the days of Deborah. The date may be computed from the time of Israel's arrival in Palestine in 1452 BCE. Counting from that year, according to Judges 3:8, Cushan-Rishathaim we identify him as Asher-Raim Nishishu, whom Israel served 8 years, and who in fact ruled 8 years. Judges 3:11, the death of Othniel, the younger brother of Caleb. Oh, wait a minute. Let me adjust this. We need to be able to read this. And jump down. Where are we? That's 6. Here we go. This is now readable. So let's start again from the top here. Okay, good. Just so you get a screenshot of the whole paragraph from the top. And then I'll go scroll down here to where we are. The death of Othniel, the younger brother of Caleb, the son of Kenaz, from Judges 3:11 of the Bible. These are in the book of Judges, which is a Bible book. In fact, it's the 7th one, because we have the 5 books of Deuteronomy. Then we have Joshua, and then Judges. And Othniel died after 40 years of peace. And 3:14 of Judges, King Eglon of Moab, whom Israel served 18 years. And 3:30 of Judges, 80 years more of peace. And 4:3 of Judges, King Jabin of Canaan, who oppressed Israel 20 years, amounting to 166 years after 1452. Let's add it up. We got 48 plus 18 is 66, and 80 is 146, and 20 more is 166. That adds up, doesn't it? Which is 1286 BCE, 166 years after 1452. Well, we saw 1386 was 66 years after 1452, so that's consistent with it, 1286. From the time of the defeat of Jabin's army by Barak, from our last sentence, to the full quote-unquote cutting off of Jabin, king of Hazor, as confirmed by archaeological digging at Hazor. We thus get 52 years. And we're going to show how we got that in 1 second. As for Israel's hand getting, quote, harder and harder, unquote, against King Jabin of Canaan in our own time, or our own chronology. 1452 minus 8 minus 40 minus 18 minus 80 minus 20 equals 1286. End of Canaanite oppression under King Jabin. And 1286 minus 1234 equals 52 years. Just so you see how we calculated this. End of Canaanite oppression to the archaeological dating of the destruction of Hazor. 52 years. So there was the hand getting harder and harder, therefore could have been happening over 52 years, which is quite reasonable, it seems. And this 1234 date, when we look to part 2 of the Crucible article, I looked that up today, and I saw that it turns out that this was the final, the date 1234 was in fact Yadin's very latest date. It was his latest date, 1234. That's from paragraph 12.3 of part 2 of the Crucible. So we're done with the Crucible for today. Let's move forward. Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 7 is today's proverb, little children. For mere oppression, that's interesting because the Israelites were oppressed at times in the Promised Land. It fits the discussion today. May make a wise one act crazy. Of course, Jabin was an oppressor. Eglon was an oppressor. We talked about those today. And a gift can destroy the heart. So it says in this verse 7 of Ecclesiastes 7, for mere oppression may make a wise one act crazy, and a gift can destroy the heart. That's news to some people. A gift can destroy the heart, like a bribe, which is why sometimes, in some circumstances, bribes are illegal. Now, moving on quickly, hopefully, to our next study. I'm trying to figure out what... Did I even do the reading today in this book? No, I don't think I... Ah, okay, well, I can go back. Yeah, and look at 2 Kings 3. That was the one we did yesterday, and we could do a 2 Kings 4. Let me verify. That's correct. I believe for today we got 2 Kings 4. There was a certain woman of the wives of the sons of the prophets that cried out to Elisha. Elisha has become the prophet who replaced Elijah. And Elisha became more famous than Elijah, or more, at least more powerful, if not more famous. And this woman said, "Your servant, my husband, is dead, and you yourself well know that your own servant had continually feared Jehovah, and the creditor himself has come to take both my children for his slaves." So she was in trouble. At this, Elisha said to her, "What shall I do for you? Tell me, what do you have in the house?" To this she said, "Your maidservant has nothing at all in the house but a spouted jar of oil." Then he said, "Go, ask for vessels for yourself from outside, from all your neighbors, empty vessels. Do not hold yourself to a few. And you must go and close the door behind yourself and your sons, and you must pour out into all these vessels, and the full ones you should set aside." Upon that she went away from him. When she closed the door behind herself and her sons, they were bringing the vessels near to her, and she was doing the pouring out. And it came about that as soon as the vessels were full, she went on to say to her son, "Do bring still another vessel near to me." But he said to her, "There is no other vessel." At that the oil stopped. So she came in and told the man of the true God, and he now said, "Go, sell the oil and pay off your debts, and you and your sons should live from what is left." So it sounds like they had a lot of oil coming from that one jar that was some kind of miracle from Elisha and from Jehovah's power and his hand upon Elijah. And it came about one day that Elijah went passing along to Shunem, where there was a prominent woman, and she began to constrain him to eat bread. And it came about that as often as he would pass by, he would turn aside there to eat bread. At length, she said to her husband, "Hear now, I well know that it is a holy man of God that is passing by us constantly." I was going to say continually, which would also be just as good. "Please, let us make a little roof chamber on the wall and put there for him a couch and a table and a chair and a lampstand. And it must occur that whenever he comes into us, he can turn aside there." And it came about one day that as usual, he came in there and turned aside to the roof chamber and lay down there. So he said to Gehazi, his attendant, "Call this Shunammite woman." At that he called her that she might stand before him. Then he said to him, "Please say to her, have you restricted yourself for us? Here you have restricted yourself for us with all this restriction. What is there to be done for you? Is there anything to speak to the king or to the chief of the army for you?" To this she said, "In among my own people I am dwelling." And he went on to say, "What then is there to be done for her?" I did prepare this, by the way, but it seems I'm very busy today. I don't know why exactly that is. I'm not really busy, but I feel urgency or something. But I had to go get wood and put the fire on today because the temperature is dropping very quickly, so I just had to go outside, bring some more wood in before it gets dark, which is just, I could always do it after dark too, but it's just easier. "In among my own people I am dwelling," and he went on to say, "What then is there to be done for her?" Gehazi now said, "For a fact, a son she does not have, and her husband is old." Immediately he said, "Call her." So he called her, and she kept standing at the entrance. Then he said, At this appointed time next year, you will be embracing a son. But he said, no, my master. She said, no, my master, O man of the true God, do not tell lies in connection with your maidservant. She didn't believe she was going to have a son. However, the woman became pregnant and gave birth to a son. Old men can apparently beget children at this appointed time the next year, just as Elisha had spoken to her. And the child kept on growing up, and it came about one day that he went out as usual to his father with the reapers, this new child, and he kept saying to his father, my head, oh, my head. At last he said to the attendant, carry him to his mother. The father said this to the attendant. Accordingly, he carried him and brought him to his mother, and he kept sitting upon her knees until noon, and he gradually died. Then she went up and laid him upon the couch of the man of the true God and closed the door upon him and went out. She now called her husband and said, do send me, please, one of the attendants and one of the she-asses, and let me run as far as the man of the true God and return. But he said, why are you going to him today? It is not a new moon nor a Sabbath. However, she said, it is all right. So she saddled up the she-ass and said to her attendant, drive and go ahead. Do not hold back for my sake from riding, unless I shall have said so to you. And she proceeded to go and come to the man of the true God at Mount Carmel. And it came about that as soon as the man of the true God, this is Elisha, evidently, saw her out ahead, he immediately said to Gehazi, I guess we should say Gehazi maybe, his attendant, not Gehazi, but Gehazi, possibly. He said to Gehazi, look, the Shunammite woman over there. Now run, please, to meet her and say to her, is it all right with you? Is it all right with your husband? Is it all right with the child? To this she said, it is all right. When she came to the man of the true God at the mountain, she at once took hold of him by his feet. At this Gehazi came near to push her away, but the man of the true God said, let her alone, for her soul is bitter within her, and Jehovah himself has hidden it from me and not told me. She now said, did I ask for a son through my Lord? Did I not say, you must not lead me to a false hope? Immediately he said to Gehazi, gird up your loins and take my staff in your hand and go. In case you encounter anyone, you must not greet him, and in case anyone should greet you, you must not answer him, and you must place my staff upon the face of the boy. At this the mother of the boy said, as Jehovah is living, and as your soul is living, I will not leave you. Therefore he got up and went with her, and Gehazi himself passed along before them, and then put the staff upon the boy's face, and there was no voice, nor paying of attention. So he went back to meet him and told him, saying, the boy did not wake up. At last Elisha came into the house, and there the boy was dead, being laid upon his couch. Then he came in and closed the door behind them both and began to pray to Jehovah. Finally he went up and lay down upon the child and put his own mouth upon his mouth and his own eyes upon his eyes and his own palms upon his palms, and kept bent over him, and gradually the child's flesh grew warm. Then he began walking again in the house, once this way and once that way, after which he went up and bent over him. And the boy began to sneeze as many as 7 times, after which the boy opened his eyes. So he now called Gehazi and said, call this Shunammite woman. So he called her, and she came in to him. Then he said, lift up your son. He had miraculously revived her son. And she proceeded to come in and fall at his feet and bow down to him to the earth, after which she lifted up her son and went out. And Elisha himself, but that's a resurrection, right? He was resurrected from the dead. And Elisha himself returned to Gilgal, and there was famine in the land. As the sons of the prophets were sitting before him, he in time said to his attendant, put the large cooking pot on and boil stew for the sons of the prophets. Accordingly, a certain one went out to the field to pick mallows, and he got to find, it's like related to the marshmallow, some kind of mallow. I'm imagining some kind of a gourd or something. He got to find a wild vine and went picking wild gourds from it. Right, that's why I'm imagining gourds. His garment full, and then came and sliced them into the stew pot, for they were not acquainted with them. Later they poured it out for the men to eat, and it came about that as soon as they ate from the stew, they themselves cried out and began saying, "There is death in the pot, O man of the true God." And they were not able to eat, so he said, "Fetch then flour." After he threw it into the pot, he went on to say, "Pour out for the people that they may eat," and nothing injurious proved to be in the pot. So that was another seeming miracle, because why would flour completely change the flavor and the reality of what was in the pot? But it apparently completely solved the problem. And there was a man that came from Baal Shalisha, and he came bringing up to the man of the true God bread of the first ripe fruits, 20 barley loaves, and new grain in his bread bag. Then he said, "Give it to the people that they may eat." 20 loaves. However, his waiter said, "How shall I put this before 100 men?" To this he said, "Give it to the people that they may eat, for this is what Jehovah has said, there will be an eating and a having of leftovers." At that he put it before them, and they began to eat, and they had leftovers according to the word of Jehovah. Another miracle, this time in the feeding of men, the quantity of bread. And the miracle of the quantity with the oil was another one we saw, and then he resurrected the boy. But first of all, he gave her the boy. That was caused her to have a son. That was another remarkable thing, with her elderly husband. It was another miracle. So there were miracles happening, in many. Apparently many miracles here, four at least it seems, that Elisha did in this one chapter. It's remarkable, is it not? Now we have, again, I don't have that chapter, but I can go down to Ezekiel. We did 27 of Ezekiel yesterday, and I don't see it here. Where is it? There it is. Okay. Now we want 28 today. And the word of Jehovah continued to occur to me, saying, "Son of man," that's correct, Ezekiel 28, "say to the leader of Tyre, this is what the sovereign Lord Jehovah has said, for the reason that your heart has become haughty, and you keep saying, 'I am a god, in the seat of God, I have seated myself in the heart of the open sea, whereas an earthling man is what you are, and not a god.'" This is what Jehovah says. "An earthling man is what you are and not a god. And you keep making your heart like the heart of a god. Look, you are wiser than Daniel. There are no secrets that have proved a match for you. By your wisdom and by your discernment," Jehovah says to the king of Tyre, "you have made wealth for your own self, and you keep getting gold and silver in your storehouses. By the abundance of your wisdom, by your sales goods, you have made your wealth abound, and your heart began to be haughty because of your wealth." This is something that is typical. It does happen to rich people. They tend to get haughty. "Therefore, this is what the sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. For the reason that you make your heart like the heart of gold, of God, not gold, for the reason that you make your heart like the heart of God," I have money on the brain here, "for the reason that you make your heart like the heart of God, therefore I am bringing upon you strangers, the tyrants of the nations, and they will certainly draw their swords against the beauty of your wisdom and profane your beaming splendor. Down to the pit they will bring you, and you must die the death of someone slain in the heart of the open sea. Will you without fail say, I am God, before the one killing you, whereas you are a mere earthling man and not a god, in the hand of those profaning you? The deaths of uncircumcised ones you will die by the hand of strangers, for I myself have spoken, is the utterance of the Sovereign Lord Jehovah. And the word of Jehovah continued to occur to me, saying, Son of man, lift up a dirge concerning the king of Tyre, and you must say to him, this is what the Sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. You are sealing up a pattern full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. In Eden, the garden of God, you proved to be. And this is the famous passage from Ezekiel chapter 28, which many commentators have said compares the king of Tyre to the devil himself as a fallen angel. In Eden, the garden of God, you proved to be. Every precious stone was your covering, ruby, topaz, and jasper, chrysolite, onyx, and jade, sapphire, turquoise, and emerald, and of gold was the workmanship of your settings and your sockets in you. In the day of your being created, they were made ready. By the way, Brother Flodine's talk was also very good. They're on the JW.org site in the video section. You are the anointed cherub that is covering, and I have set you on the holy mountain of God you proved to be. In the midst of fiery stones you walked about. You were faultless in your ways from the day of your being created until unrighteousness was found in you. There is one thing about using the advice from the Bible in the New Testament part of it, in the Greek scriptures, that the teaching of Jesus is always superior to the teaching of the other apostles. That's just a finer point to keep in mind. Because of the abundance, verse 16, of your sales goods, they filled the midst of you with violence, and you began to sin. And I shall put you as profane out of the mountain of God, and I shall destroy you, O cherub that is covering, from the midst of the fiery stones. So violence is associated with money there, verse 16. Your heart became haughty because of your beauty. You brought your wisdom to ruin on account of your beaming splendor. Onto the earth I will throw you. Before kings I will set you for them to look upon you. Owing to the abundance of your errors, because of the injustice of your sales goods, you have profaned your sanctuaries, and I shall bring forth a fire from the midst of you. It is what must devour you, and I shall make you ashes upon the earth before the eyes of all those seeing you. As for all those knowing you among the peoples, they will certainly stare in amazement at you. Sudden terrors are what you must become, and you will be no more to time indefinite. And the word of Jehovah continued to occur to me, saying, Son of man, set your face towards Sidon and prophesy against her. And you must say, Sidon is another seacoast city of the Mediterranean, not far from Tyre. And people will have to know, O Sidon, here I am against you, O Sidon, and I shall certainly be glorified in the midst of you. And people will have to know that I am Jehovah when I execute acts of judgment in her, and I am actually sanctified in her. It's typical in the Bible where we constantly get this change of case. Is it case or is it something else? I don't think it's case. It might be. It's the pronoun is suddenly changed in the midst of you, and then it says judgment in her, and I will send pestilence into her, meaning you, Tyre, or in this case it's Sidon, the city, and blood into her streets, and the slain one must fall in the midst of her by the sword against her on every side, and people will have to know that I am Jehovah, and no more will there prove to be to the house of Israel a malignant prickle or a painful thorn out of all those round about them, those who are treating them with scorn. And people will have to know that I am the Sovereign Lord Jehovah. Jehovah didn't like when people around the Israelites were scorning and mocking the Israelites and displaying scorn toward his people. This is what the Sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. When I collect together the house of Israel out from the peoples among whom they have been scattered, because, of course, Ezekiel writes during the time of the exile, which was in our chronology BCE 597. His book starts in the fifth year of the exile, which is evidently BCE 593. And so the peoples among whom they have been scattered, there are also people from the nation of Israel, the ten tribes, that were scattered when Samaria was conquered by Assyria in 719 BCE. But this is now later than 593, but approaching to the destruction of Jerusalem, and more exiled peoples that will be taken from Jerusalem during the time of destruction of Jerusalem. But the exile has already occurred, which is about 10 years before the destruction. I will also be sanctified among them in the eyes of the nations. Jehovah will be sanctified among his people in the eyes of the nations when he gathers back the house of Israel from the peoples among whom they had been scattered, and they will certainly dwell upon their soil that I gave to my servant, to Jacob, which was the promised land, right? But he gave it to Jacob after they came back from Egypt, of course, but he also gave it to Jacob before that, because he gave it to Abraham, who was Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob was the lineage. Jacob was a grandson of Abraham. And they will actually dwell upon it, that is the promised land, in security, and build houses and plant vineyards, and they must dwell in security when I execute acts of judgment upon all those treating them with scorn all round. All round about them. There's the scorn again on the part of those who are all around about Jehovah's people. And he doesn't like that, so he's going to execute acts of judgment upon those ones who treat his people with scorn. And they're the ones particularly who are living all around his people, with whom Jehovah's concerned, or about whom he's concerned. And they will have to know that I am Jehovah their God. And that's the end of Ezekiel chapter 28. So not just Jehovah's people will have to know, but the other nations will have to know too. People generally in verse 24 will have to know that Jehovah is the sovereign Lord. He has a right, that means, to be the ruler, to be the one who exercises power and judgment when necessary. And let's see what we have. We've got to go to Revelation chapter 20 now. And I saw an angel coming down out of heaven with the key of the abyss and a great chain in his hand. We're out of time. Oh my goodness. And he seized the dragon. We're going to have to continue, or we'll have to stop. But we're going to go over time regardless, so I think we'll just read it. And a great chain in his hand, and he seized the dragon, the original serpent, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years, and he hurled him into the abyss and shut it and sealed it over him, that he might not mislead the nations any more until the 1,000 years were ended. After these things he must be let loose for a little while. And I saw thrones, and there were those who sat down on them, and power of judging was given them. Yes, I saw the souls of those executed with the axe for the witness they bore to Jesus and for speaking about God, and those who had worshipped neither the wild beast nor its image, and who had not received the mark upon their forehead and upon their hand, and they came to life and ruled as kings with the Christ for 1,000 years. The rest of the dead did not come to life until the 1,000 years were ended. or did not come to life fully. They may have, the resurrection was carried out during the 1,000 years. This is the first resurrection, the ones who ruled with Christ. Happy and holy is anyone having part in the first resurrection. Over these, the second death has no authority, whereas other people can die a second death if they don't respond well to the teaching after their resurrection. But over these heavenly ones, the second death has no authority, but they will be priests of God and of the Christ, and will rule as kings with him for the 1,000 years. Now, as soon as the 1,000 years have been ended, Satan will be let loose out of his prison, and he will go out to mislead those nations in the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together for the war. The number of these is as the sand of the sea, and they advanced over the breadth of the earth and encircled the camp of the holy ones and the beloved city. But fire came down out of heaven and devoured them. And the devil who was misleading them was hurled into the lake of fire and sulfur, where both the wild beast and the false prophet already were. And they will be tormented day and night, forever and ever. And I saw a great white throne, and the one seated on it. Just got a few more verses. From before him the earth and the heaven fled away, and no place was found for them. And I saw the dead, the great and the small, standing before the throne. And scrolls were opened, but another scroll was opened. It is the scroll of life. And the dead were judged out of those things written in the scrolls, according to their deeds. And the sea gave up those dead in it, and death and Hades gave up those dead in them, and they were judged individually according to their deeds. And death and Hades were hurled into the lake of fire. This means the second death, the lake of fire. Furthermore, whoever was not found written in the book of life was hurled into the lake of fire. That's the end of Revelation 20. There's something else, too. Remember Jesus said in John 8:32, the truth will set you free. So freedom is part of having the truth. And this idea of needing to be subject to some authority beyond the authority of Jesus himself as the representative of Jehovah is just a false teaching. It's a false teaching to say that you have to be subject to some further body or organization. That's just not scriptural, not according to the teaching of Jesus. So it's important, it's a massively important thing. So that means you must avoid becoming subject to the rule of people who are attempting to enslave you or, you know, take away your freedom. You must not allow people to take away your freedom. That's the key thing there. So, it is the end of our study. It's January 20th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 1918, amazingly. Hours Eastern Standard Time. That was the end of World War One, was it not? And we also have, in my behalf, I'm Ward Green, I love you, and in my behalf, I do love you. And in my behalf, this is Gully. And no, it's not Gully. It's not Gully, it's Dusty. It's Dusty, and this is Cassie. This is the Moon Dust Watch. That's why she's called Dusty. And they are saying bye for now.